Legends forged forever. In the heat of battle, going the distance, traversing all of the roads. Let's travel, emerge from the scrap with your sword and shield strapped to your saddle. Enter the red zone, don't hesitate. Attack and get tackled in the legacy pit. You can green stuff for grist. Unholy heat emanates from a mysterious mist. So channel your inner rage like you're a dragon from Shiv. Cause if you want to attack me, you better not miss. I will bring the fury with my endless endurance. But force of will ain't subtle, your sudden grief my assurance. When we tangle in the tabernacle, vision goes blurry. Cause the legacy pit is only for warriors worthy of carrying the mantle and ultimately become the greatest. Playtest is over, time to engage with the assailants who lay claim to the championship on top of the pit. Time to make a decision, tap out or submit.
Time to beat your fate in the legacy pit. Come and swing some spells for the championship. Playing on the stack, captivate the chat. Magic has got built intended, so prepare to attack.
Hello and welcome to Eternal Dirtles. I'm your host, Zach Clark, and with me as always, Phil Bleckman. Phil, how's it going, man?
Bro, what's up, bro? You ready to talk about how every card just works egregiously with fetch lands? Let's go.
Yes. This is the Dominaria United Commander set, and we also have a couple of the legends that they kind of like rethought out in here as well. But this will give us a bit of a couple more cards to talk about from that set and just talk about the relevance and legacy. We've got 11 cards, one honorable mention, and then 10 in no particular order. So I guess let's get to it, huh?
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right. So for our honorable mention, we have Green Sleeves Morrow Sorcerer. Green Sleeves Morrow Sorcerer is a 5-mana XX. With protection from planeswalkers and from wizards. Its power toughness is equal to the number of land you control. Then it has landfall, create a 3/3 green badger token.
So let me just point out that they didn't write landfall on here, which is extremely triggering.
Of course.
just write yep. Landfall. They have that mechanic. I don't understand.
So, but, yeah.
So now that... So with protection from wizards, so WotC can never errata this card.
Yeah, no, they're done. That's it. That can't even ban
it's
it.
It's over. They can't do
they
anything.
They can't ban it. Card. Like, yeah, it's over.
It's weird to mess themselves up like that, but yep. Yeah.
But no, so the reason why I you know, this is, like I said, an honorable mention. It's barely playable. The fact that we're getting that reprint of Liliana means that there may be more Liliana decks popping up in your local meta, just because it's an affordable, it's slightly more affordable than it was before, and there are going to be some decks that are out there playing that. So this is a great... a great like top end inclusion to like a Nykfit deck or something like that, where you create that badger every turn. They can't like play Liliana and kill your Morrow, because it's like that's the only planeswalker that could actually kill the Morrow Sorcerer is something that targets a player and makes you sacrifice it. So this is an interesting card, and like you've got veteran explorer and stuff like that like triple trigger in a turn.
Yeah, it's landfall, so fetch land, so every fetch land is just 6 power on the table. So
yeah, amazing.
Like this feels very in the Titania space to me.
Yeah,
and it would just I in my mind it would just occupy that slot, you know. Yeah. It's like it doesn't give you the immediate value of recurring a land, and you know, a 5/3 versus a 3/3, it's like, okay, it's going to die to the same things. The difference though is that like rather than needing a land to die to get a trigger, it just happens when they land ETBs. So it's pro and con. It really is dependent on if you think you're going to run into, if your meta is just like mono Teferi and you want a fat green thing that Teferi can't touch, like, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't think it's going to be breaking any tables. It's just another dumb
cog
green
in the
idiot
wheel.
That
yeah. Big green,
cool.
Big green idiot. Yeah.
Ho. Like pro wizards are like, oh man, you can't Venser this. Sheesh. Mm-mm. Can't Venser this green sleeves.
Yeah.
Don't even try it. Don't even try it.
All right. So let's talk about our next card that technically, Shapeshifter is the one that is all creatures, right?
Or no, that's Changeling.
That's Changeling. Okay, never mind. So
I
take what I said back. So we've got the ever-changing Apostrophe Dane.
Yeah, so it's really from Halfdane, right?
Yeah.
Which was a Legends card.
So this is the full Dane.
It's a 3/3 for Esper mana, and it's 3 mana, and it says it's a legendary creature shapeshifter. One sacrifice another creature. The ever-changing Dane becomes a copy of the sacrificed creature, except it has this ability. Yeah. So this is like a fat Lazav.
Yeah, and you can play, like, if you have 2 mana, you can play your Dreadnought, sack it before the sacrifice trigger the Dreadnought goes through.
This will become a 12/12 trampler.
Yeah, and it's a 12/12 trampler, which is
that also has the ability to sacrifice other creatures. So
that's where you want the Dreadnought for Lazav, and you can put Lazav in play and still get a Dreadnought out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is actually going to show up on any Legacy tables because it's mana gated.
Yeah,
Like Lazav is already pretty fringy, but the fact that you can, like, 4/3 mana to get the ever-changing Dane, if you have the Dreadnought in your yard, which you could play a turn earlier or do other things to get it into your yard, this specifically needs the Dreadnought to be on the table with 2 mana for you to sacrifice it to actually copy it, where Lazav can go in stages. So I don't think this is going to see any play, but the obvious thing to me that cards, the effect that a card would need to actually make it into Legacy either is it's a 1 mana or 2 mana creature with a cheap activated ability, or the ability has to be mana, it has to cost no mana. So if this just said sacrifice a creature, then there's a bunch of like combo shenanigans probably that you could do with triggers on the stack.
Yeah.
But because it's mana gated, it's just never actually going to get there. Like anytime something is mana gated, it's just costed out of Legacy, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I just like that, like, this goes, you know, it gets you a little bit closer to playing like an Esper style, like black to basics Dreadnought style deck that I think is not positioned well right now. But, you know, we've got there's so many cards coming into the format over the next like 2 months that I think that it's just interesting to look at these cards and you know, think of ways to use them. And then when you actually do see them, inevitably, like, somebody's going to like be that guy who plays at your local and is like, I'm trying this deck. You know how to play around them.
If you wanted to be the Dreadnought player, there's just so many other cheaper options than this. So like between Stifle and Dressdown, and then if you move into another color, you get Lazav. But also in the same color, you now have Slip Out the Back, which brings your Dreadnought back as a 13/13.
Yep.
So then Slip Out the Back can also function as a removal spell for a turn, because you can phase your opponent's creature out and then kill them on a swings before they get their creature back. Those, all of those cards, I feel like, you would lean towards first because they're cheaper in one color. In Lazav's case, only stretching into another color to play Dreadnought, whereas this would just need an entire overhaul. It just opens up a bunch of weaknesses. I just don't think we're ever going to see it.
All right.
Outside of like your fun FNMs. You're like,
I think the thing, you might see it in FNM or something like that. But it's out there. It's an option. Let's talk about Hazazon, Shaper of Sand. This is Naya for a 3/3. You got a white, green, and red for a 3/3 with Desert Walk. But you can play desert lands from your graveyard, and whenever a desert enters the battlefield under your control, create 2 Naya Sand Warrior creatures.
So just wait until they print the desert fetch land.
Yeah,
I think this to me, its only weakness is that it's in a color combination that just has never been playable in Legacy.
Yes.
But the effect of this card is, I think, is actually really good. We've seen Ramunap Excavator be playable. The thing is that it's playable because it can recur shit like Wasteland.
Yeah.
You know, and fetch lands, obviously, where this can only recur deserts.
Unfortunately, right now, also on the desert level, is like, I don't see us going back to desert land anytime soon. Like, we're not going to like an Arabian Nights style thing in the near future, although I could be wrong. That they printed this card, right? It's in standard. It's easily possible.
It's not standard. Like, this is commander product.
This is commander. You're not wrong. But so the Brothers War is coming up, and there could be plenty of lands that they decide to make deserts in that are slightly closer to Legacy playable.
Yeah, I think that's where it is, right? Like deserts, they can kind of just throw deserts anytime they feel like it's flavorfully there. Yeah. Like it's kind of like gates. It doesn't necessarily need to have gate mechanic attached to it. They just, like, for limited purposes, they can just make like a desert sub theme the same way that there's a gate sub theme.
Yeah.
And it could pop up anytime. Like, you know, Hazazon's power level can only ever go up because they can only ever print more deserts, right? So like,
exactly,
if they ever print a desert that sacks itself on the cheap, like right now you have one that's just the Tormod script. Like, you have that.
Yeah, you got like Ramunap Ruins. It does 2 damage. It's like 5 total mana.
5 mana. You're never getting that. But there's also
there's a mill one.
There's the land, the mainland. that comes in as a 3-4 if you exile a land, and that's a cheap one. So you could theoretically would keep recurring threats and use your fetches to recur that. This is also a green sun target. Like, there's a lot that this deck, that this card offers, particularly because if you're in the desert deck, every desert making 2/1s is that. I mean, that's a really powerful pyromancer. Like, I don't think the tools are there for this card, but I think in the future, if they ever, like, all this needs is the like the powerful desert that you'd want to recur. The second that you have a desert worth recurring, this could just be an easy one of in a Green Sun Zenith deck that opts into that package.
We could talk about none of those deserts are like pay a life to do a thing, right? I think the pay the life part is making the mana from them. So that's not as good.
Yeah, the only time I've ever seen a desert in play is when, like, you know, we saw the Tormod's Crypt Desert as a means to, instead of like your, instead of like decks that aren't crop rotting.
Yeah,
may have that as a means to do it, because an activated ability to threaten is better than a bog, but it's very rare and it doesn't show up that often. And I don't think it's definitely not worth it to put this card in your deck.
All right, so let's talk about what I was alluding to was Varric the Warp Sengir, for one, a black and a white. It's a legendary vampire with flying, death touch, and lifelink. And it says, whenever you activate an ability that isn't a mana ability, if life was paid to activate it, you may pay that much life again. If you do, copy that ability, and you may choose new targets.
I hate this card so much. Not that it's doing anything wrong. It's just like, use any amount of words to say fetch lands without saying fetch lands. Whenever you activate an ability that isn't a mana ability, if life was spent to activate it, you may pay that much life again. If you do copy that ability, it's like, oh, what's an activated ability that isn't a mana ability that costs life that everybody plays all the time?
Egregious in that. If you named every card on here that could be, would it be the same number of letters? You know, like,
whenever you activate an ability that isn't a mana ability,
yeah.
But it's just like, you, I feel like you have to reach, like, the only thing that's played that everybody plays with this works with is fetch lands, so you can double up your fetch lands. So it's like,
the best part is Necropotence costs zero mana, it can be done anyhow. So, like, you'd still be paying one life to draw one card, but now you're paying two life to draw two cards.
I love vampires, I love the gimmick. I just hate that it's just so glaring to me that they're like, well, this is good with fetch lands and then other stuff too.
I think thus far, though, this is the card that has the most legs for Legacy that we've talked about.
Three mana.
No, yeah.
It's three mana, I'm saying, it does nothing on
about these cards. You think what? Green Sleeves is a more Legacy playable card than Warp Sengir? Okay, fair enough.
I think Sleeves actually has a competitive slot to vie for and like the random decks between Titania and it, whereas nobody's paying three mana for a 2/2. That doesn't do anything by itself.
Yeah, I guess nobody's doing that. I guess that's fair. You need to play us on turn four so that you can hit your like six mana.
Yeah, you can pay two life to tutor up two lands, like
double ramp,
and then cool, you have this card in your deck. Like, yep.
All right, so let's move on to Moria, Urborg Haunt. That is 2 and a black for a legendary creature, spirit wizard, menace. So 3/2, whenever Moria Urborg Haunt deals combat damage to a player, return to the battlefield target creature that was put into the battlefield from there this turn. I only bring this card up for Nate because this just feels like some like aristocrat shenanigans that you can get into.
It's so much work. Dude, if we're not playing the Mardu Jansen from D&D or whatever that card was, that just sacks artifacts and makes tokens and Jansen, what's that card's name?
I think it's Jens Jansen.
Jansen. if we aren't even looking at Jansen Jansen that does a bunch of shit by himself with like other cards that would already be in your deck, this requires so much work. Like, it gives you nothing when you ETB. You already have to have a sac outlet on the table. It's got to deal combat damage to the player. It doesn't protect it, do anything. It's just so many hoops.
Jansen, Chaos Crafter is the name of the card.
Just go play Jan Jansen. Some Jan Jansen.
All right, let's move on to, I'm going to have trouble with this one, Rushnacht.
Rosnacht.
Heir to Ruga. Rosnacht. Heir to Ruga.
Rosnacht, yeah.
Freaking kobold. So this is a one mana red creature that has, it's a kobold that has battle cry. And then it has heroic. Now, I don't know if heroic's good. I know heroic's bad, actually. Let's just put it out there.
Here's a quick question. Why is Battle Cry written out and heroic is written out in this commander product and landfall is not?
Yep. I mean, that's a great question. On top of that, it doesn't explain what heroic is. It just says heroic and then explains the text of heroic after the dash.
What's the difference between a keyword and a mechanic?
Yeah, yeah.
So, here's, but I get that. I get that. Watsy gets that. But Landfall.
Here's my thing.
Not,
have we ever, minus Rugrak, we've never had a one mana. We've had less than one mana, but a one mana red legend.
There's a couple of one mana red legends floating around these days.
Are there? Okay. It's been a minute. Ragavan? Since I thought. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Ragavan. So anyhow, this is obviously like, it's good in a situation where you want to be attacking, but like, I can't think, you see a one mana legend and you have to think about it for a second. And Battlecry can be a very powerful ability. I just don't think we're going to see like mono red heroic take over the tables at your local.
No, I think the heroic thing is nonsense. I think the thing that this is a one mana 0/1 Battlecry, which is, what's that artifact that was in Affinity that has the exact same thing?
Yeah, something mirror.
No, it's not a mirror.
If you want to
try and find it, we'll bring it up. But like the Affinity deck that used to play a one mana 0/1 with Battlecry for the deck that goes wide. So I remember when the legendary dog with partner, that every time a legendary permanent ETBs, it gets a +1/+1 counter. That could get big very fast. Like just like the aggro
signal
legends
pest.
Deck.
It's signal pest.
This is a signal pest. So for the aggro legends deck, that deck hits very hard, but it just doesn't have any card advantage, so it gasses out really quickly. But Boros Legends aggro deck, where it just hits hard, like it's just attacking the format by like, okay, I'm gonna put you dead on turn three on a goldfish that's just attacking your life total. This I imagine would just go into that as more legends, like cheap legends that get Battlecry. Because if you think like you go turn one, Yamamoro, I think, or whatever the name of the dog is, and then this plus another thing, you attack with the dog for three, untap, and now you're threatening with any amount of other legends on the table. If you have this plus the other ones, it's like, okay, we're attacking for whatever the power of the second creature is, plus one, at least four power on the dog, across bodies, with mana up, you know, like that. There's a really aggressive start now that you have all these legends. And that deck is a build around of the dog. So you need every single card in your deck to be a legend to really pay it off. So if you play all the legend lands and all the legend in red and white, and you have that draw between this, if you think like the same way that Affinity plays out, it would play out similarly. And except like instead of playing dopey artifacts, you play legendary creatures that have relevant text, but you exchange soul lands for ability lands. So like you would max out Caracas, you'd probably play like all the Sakenzins and Ganjos, you know. So you'd be offsetting those things. But also, if you have all these one mana and cheap spells, you wouldn't need to move into soul lands the same way that you need for the artifact.
Exactly. So, okay.
Is it good? No, but that's where it would live.
So for continuing on the one mana theme, we have a one mana artifact, Gerard's Hourglass Pendant. It's legendary. It has flash. If a player would begin an extra turn, that player skips that turn instead. The relevant text here is four mana and tap it. Exile the pendant, return to the battlefield, tapped, all artifact, creature, enchantment, and land cards that went put to your graveyard from the battlefield this turn. I mention this card because it is a one mana artifact, and we live in a world where Urza's Saga exists. I guess the musical question here is this card worth getting with Urza's Saga in an 8-cast deck? I think no.
No, definitely not. Too expensive. This is very geared toward EDH for a player. Like, it's extra turn hate, obviously.
We got a guy in our group.
We can go on from this one. Four mana to tap, exile it to return all the things for when somebody wipes your board. Like, that is way more prominent in EDH. Like, nobody's going to have this in their deck with four mana up to save.
How often are board wipes even happening in this format? Like, in a situation where, like, you've got four mana open and you're just, like, waiting for your opponent to do the thing. And they're like, I guess I just lose anyhow.
Unless there's some card that makes it so any of the, there's some kind of vault key deck in Legacy that this can be a sideboard card against, as just, like, extra turns can't be taken.
I mean, that said, this is a fine card to, like, add to your 50, like, what? 55 other cards that aren't
this is the type of card that like this is your card that if you ever play an Urza Saga deck, you would definitely have one
in vintage,
if you are targeting a meta where there's a prominent play deck that takes extra turns or it just takes infinite turns as his win condition to shut that off, the same way that you play the thing that shuffles like cards from the graveyard back into their deck to fuck up Doomsday. Yeah. You know? It's similar to that, right? You play that card solely for Doomsday. You play this solely for the extra turns, though.
All
right.
So on the level of we're tying each of these into each other somehow. On level of legendary artifacts, we have the Mana Rig. It's a 3-mana artifact that says whenever you cast a multicolored spell, create a tapped Power Stone, which is just a mana rock. And then it says XXX, so 3x. Look at the top and tap it. Look at the top cards of your library. Put 2 of them onto the into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in random order.
I don't think this is playable. What do you think?
You don't think it's playable? So I don't know, man. Like, I see this and I look at a card. I look at this card and I think this is a late game draw engine.
Now, so maybe you could talk me into this being something that your big mana Cloud Post deck wants.
Well, so not Cloud Post because you're producing colorless mana like a lot for it. I'm saying you want to be getting the value out of the Power Stones to then be able to make the Mana Rig, like, basically, like, continue to draw into other cards off the Mana Rig. So this is a deck, like, if we get to a point where we're like, okay, we have, like, cards like Expressive Iteration and Kotal and stuff like that, and you're basically able to get, you know, like, free cards every couple of turns, this card snowballs after a minute.
Yeah, I maybe you're right. I mean, I struggle to see the world where the multicolored decks would want this as opposed to, like, any of the other multicolored spells that draw cards immediately or give you value immediately without needing to sink mana. But, you know, if this is just a 3-mana rock that's going to dig through time you every turn off of when you're a big mana deck just to find your threats, like, I could see that world. I could live in that world.
If you're getting to a point where you can activate this for 6, look, I mean, that's a whole different game, obviously. Like, it's a legacy game that's gone on for too long, in my opinion. But there are other cards now that are making a lot of mana that like specifically our next card
just to be clear, 6 mana means that if you're sinking X is 2,
you're getting the top 2 cards.
So it's a 6 mana divination after you've already put 3 mana into this card. That's just too expensive. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is a lot. Now, keep in mind that some of that mana will be free because of your Power Stone tokens,
assuming that you've made any.
Of course. All right. So let's go to the next card, because that card is just something to look at and be like, is that worth doing? This next card, I think, actually has a home. It is another legendary artifact. This one's red. It's called the Reaver Cleaver. For 2 and a red, we have a legendary artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +1/+1 and trample. Whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player or planeswalker, create that many treasure tokens. Equip 3. I think that this is a card that could be slotted into the red deck if you want to eschew the planeswalkers and you want to go more with like Rabble Master and the other like goblin guys. The other goblin guy we talked about in the last show as well. Like, I think this card has the ability to like get you way ahead on mana when you're already like stopping them from doing stuff and you're going further into that plan.
I'm gonna let you do that.
Yeah, I don't like these decks, and I don't know if this is the best thing you can be doing, but it is another option.
It sure is. If this ever shows up across the table from me, I'm gonna be like, I'm sitting at the wrong table.
Yep. You have lost round one. Then we're going to go into, I would consider these next 2 cards are top 2, like are really playable. Like, these cards you're probably going to see. One is Tiller Engine. That is a 2-mana creature artifact construct. Whenever a land enters the battlefield, tapped and under your control, choose 1. Untap that land or tap a target non-land permanent an opponent controls.
I mean, it's Magus of the Amulet of Vigor, and there is no Amulet of Vigor deck in Legacy because Wasteland exists. Yep. So,
well, here's the thing. Is 8. Is you look at what's it called? Cloud Post decks, like 8 Post. I think 8 Post would be happy with this card because it's relevant all the time. You know, like, no matter how what you're playing, you're going to be like, oh, I'll throw that in and I'll tap your guy. Or, you know, like, or I'll tap this, you know, you're going to be able to start getting to a point where your opponent can't counter your giant spells that you're going to be casting because you're like, okay, and then I'll go to combat, your mana drains,
This format's a free counter spell format.
It's true.
Tapping non-land permanents, it doesn't affect that. I think, like, the latter ability is if you're ahead and you get to stay ahead because you can tap down blockers, cool. Or you can, if you have any amount of ways to put lands on the top on your opponent's field, you can blank combat steps. But otherwise, you're not putting this card in your deck if you're not untapping lands. Like, if that untap land clause isn't the boon of this card.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. I apologize for giving more weight to the second ability. It's certainly the untapped land part is the bigger part. This is another Candelabra. in your deck, you know, like it basically allows you to get a couple extra mana in the decks that like want this ability.
I mean, if there ever was, you know, an Amulet of Vigor Cloud Post deck, like if that was ever a thing to be had, now that there's eight of the effect, it's like, okay, maybe there's something new there. I don't know if that deck has space, because I imagine that if you are doing that, you would want things on the cheaper end in the early turns as you cast this. Because like, let's say, you know, if you go turn one tap land, that's a problem, right? But if you go turn one forest, cast Amulet, turn two post, untap, you have two mana, cast Tiller, then untap, cast another post, untap, now you have what,
five mana?
You have more than that because you get triggers. So you untap, make three mana, make two mana, untap it again, so you would have 2, 4, 6, 7 mana on turn three.
Yeah,
but you would also have no cards in your hand.
Well, I think that this card has its uses. I just don't know those decks well enough to say like what is going on. And it seems like something that, like, look, we're not going to see like a Gates deck come out, you know, like
that. Also, that's the other thing too, that we're not going to see the Gates deck. What's the non cloud post post? The one that gains life, the other post.
Oh, Glimmer Post?
No. Whatever the other post is.
Glimmer Post.
Is it Glimmer Post?
I think it is Glimmer Post. Yeah.
So the other post, the one that gains life, that one comes into play untapped, right? So
no, I think it also comes into play tapped.
Okay, you can tell we're not Cloud Post aficionados.
Yeah, I'm not.
If the Cloud Post decks exist, it would be an Amulet of Vigor. This is Amulet of Vigor 5 through 8. Best of luck to you, Eldrazi players that always destroy my soul.
Glimmer Post. No, it does come into play untapped.
Yeah, so you can cast, you play Glimmer Post turn one, cast Amulet. Cloud Post on two, untap. You now have three mana ready. You can cast Tiller plus something else if you wanted.
Well, also you've got
you have more than that. You have five mana on turn two.
You've got Vesuva that comes into play tapped.
Okay, no? Okay. Now we're talking. If you have Glimmer Post on one, cast Amulet, Cloud Post, untap, that gives you, no, that would still only give you three mana.
That's three. And then and then you go to the next turn and you're like, okay, I'll play a Vesuva, untap it. That's what, seven mana?
That would be seven. Yes, you cast Karn. So you're playing Tron.
Yeah, you're playing Tron.
Yes.
Is it a better version of Tron? Maybe.
I mean, I'll definitely never beat it. So
yeah. There's no way for your slow ass deck to beat that. All right, we're getting to the number one, in my opinion, number one card from this commander set. Emperor Mihail the Second, 3/3 for three. That's two blue and a colorless merfolk noble legend. You can look at the top of your library at any time. You can cast merfolk spells from the top of your library. If you cast a merfolk spell, you can pay one. If you do, you get a 1/1 blue merfolk creature token.
Everybody's been talking that this is the card that you can play with Thoughtlash, so you can get to your Thassa's Oracle, because you can cast the Thassa's Oracle from the top of your deck, and then with the trigger on the stack, exile the rest of your deck.
Okay.
And then I'm thinking to myself, everybody's like, yeah, this is you put it in with your Thoughtlash combo deck, and then it's another way that you can, you know, combo with the Thoughtlash. I'm like, fam, you were already there.
Yeah, you're jumping.
You have the Thoughtlash on the table. Hoops. You're already there.
Yeah. I think in that scenario, you're jumping through too many hoops. What you want to be doing is attacking with this. This is just like the top end of your Merfolk deck. You throw two of these into your Merfolk deck. You've got four True Names, two of these, and everything else is a two mana Lord. And you just run roughshod on people, man. Like you've got you can play the Tide Shaper, and you can even play the Dockside guy, and you can make the deck go long if you want to.
So you have Hexcatcher now in the format that wants you to go wide because you want to be able to counter all their spells.
Yeah, it's great. Like, you can pay one to sacrifice a merfolk and counter spells. Yeah,
this
great.
Is actually a token generator for merfolk, which is something that they want. Guess the only other merfolk token generator that isn't like four mana. There's one other three mana merfolk token generator.
Right? Yeah.
It is not. No.
Oh. Well, there is one.
There is an enchantment for three mana that makes 2/1s, or four mana that makes 2/1s, and then every time you cast it, you make another 1/1. But that's too expensive.
Yeah.
There's
and you can vial this in where you can't vial that in. You know,
from original Zendikar, there is a card called something Lore Master or something. It's a 2/2 Merfolk that says whenever you counter a spell, make a 1/1 Merfolk. But I think it's mana gated.
Put that up.
If you tap seven Merfolk, you can counter a spell.
Yeah.
It's very cute. but it's the only one.
Yeah, that's right. So, I remember seeing that's actually spiked recently, I think, because everyone's like,
because everybody all thought, these oh, people maybe are like,
hey, look, a legendary merfolk. Let me make a merfolk commander deck.
Promise all of you it's not the thing.
No.
This one, I mean,
it might be a commander. Who knows?
This is interesting because it actually does. This is potential card advantage because you can look at the top. You can cast spells from the top of your deck.
Yeah, you're, so and you're, if you're playing a merfolk deck, you're gonna be casting merfolk spells.
You're be casting those merfolk, bro.
Yeah. I like this card a lot. I think this moves Merfolk to slightly more playable. You're more likely to see a Merfolk deck, especially because it's a relatively cheap deck to make, and it's gotten a lot of tools over the past like 2 months. You know,
also this card also incentivizes you to play one mana Merfolk because you want to cast it for one mana and pay one mana and make a token.
Yep, and you're not casting them off of your vial, so you're not going to be able to get them off your vial.
Fuck vial, get vial out of here.
Want vial, I think. Anyhow,
you want to cast Merfolk.
Anyhow, that's what I've got. Those are the cards from Dominaria, the Commander set from Dominaria United. If you have some picks, please share them in the comment section. Tweet us. The tweet stuff is all in our in the podcast. You can see that. You can check out our decks over at moxfield.com. Do you know about moxfield.com?
I've heard of it. Yeah. Can you remind me what it is?
Hell yeah. Moxfield.com is an amazing deck building website. It's easily one of the most visually usable deck building websites out there. It's great for Commander. It's great for Legacy, which we're playing. It supports pre-modern, vintage, every decent format that you can think about playing. It's on there. So if you're out there building pre-modern decks, you should be using Moxfield to share those decks. And I think that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with the cards that we like from the 40K set. And I'm very excited about
Man,
that.
The 40K set, bro. Yep. Wow. Wow. Right. Triumph of St. Catherine. Wow.
All right. Thanks so much. And we'll see you next week.
Yo, what up? It's Voice of Phil up on the track. And you know, we just keep talking about it. Talking about it, so I figured, you know what? Let's fucking talk about it. Let's fucking talk about it. We're talking about it. Strap in, because we're talking about it.
Looky, 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 what did we just top deck? Expressive iteration, about to create some nonsense. Put the best card in our hand, exile a fetch land. Crack it and stack it and pack it in, let's talk about the bans. Watsy, 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 let us have a little chat. I got an offer, you can't refuse two treasures off the stack. But seriously, consider it and open up the shed. You whip out the band hammer, I will quip a Twitter thread. Expressive iteration gone, what's gonna happen now? Same story as Dreadheart Arcanist, Oko Thief of Crowns. Same thing as Treasure Cruise, Larissa the Dream Den, Deathrite Shaman, Ren and Six, why we keep pretending? Toro lays in wait just to bring upon his wrath. There's a saga building, constructs powered level, different class. Teferi in our set, draw engines and log pieces. How the fuck am I the only player who seems to see this? The problem is systemic, it goes back to Innistrad. Cheap threats, days, wasteland, that's the problem, child. The cards I said before, they've all been in Delver. Brute forcing down with Uro and Sagavan, remember? Burnt head on the block! Fuck it, see what happens. The best deck will just adopt the next new best plan of action. I don't have all the answers, but what we're doing, it ain't working. Can we all at least agree to have a future that's uncertain? Try a sample platter of the format up on Modo, where a different card is banned to collect data to look over. You don't even have to share it, transparency is so hard. But maybe your next ban announcement will hit the correct card.
Oh, fuck, man. I just don't know. Fuck it. Just hit the hook, bro. Just hit the hook. What it do?
Look at what it, we just top deck. Expressive iteration, about to create some nonsense. With the best card in our hand, exile the fetch land. Crack it and stack it and pack it in, let's talk about the bands.
Look at what it, we just top deck. Expressive iteration, about to create some nonsense. With the best card in our hand, exile the fetch land. Crack it and stack it and pack it in, let's talk about the bands.